Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Let's Sleep On It, Reclaiming Parenthood, the podcast. And I'm your host, Taylor Kulik, a sleep and well-being specialist and occupational therapist. My mission with this podcast is to examine the parenting narratives that dominate our culture and grow together as parents. Here, we will talk about biological infant sleep, as well as many other parenting-related topics. And you'll also hear real empowering journeys from parents who are parenting against the grain. I hope that you walk away from each episode feeling inspired, empowered, and supported. Please remember that none of the information shared in this podcast is medical advice, and you should always speak with a trusted healthcare provider if you have any concerns. Let's dive into today's episode. Many of y'all know that I'm really passionate about non-toxic products, and I'm super mindful of the products that we bring into our home. I actually am not a big makeup wearer, and part of that is because I've had a really hard time finding non-toxic makeup products that actually work and that I actually like, until I found Araza Beauty. Araza Beauty is an amazing organic natural paleo makeup company. A lot of their products are made from real food ingredients, and you can pronounce most of the ingredients. I love their all-in-one coconut cream foundation. It offers a lot of coverage, actually more coverage than I'm typically used to because I don't really like the way makeup feels on my face, but it's so comfortable. I don't feel it on my face and it looks amazing. I also love their mango cream color pot for just a little bit of color on my cheeks. Everything is so creamy and makes your skin look so dewy and healthy. You can save 15% off your first order when you use the code Taylor. So go to arazabeauty.com. That's A-R-A-Z-A beauty.com and use the code Taylor to save 15% on your first order. Hello, everyone. Today, I have Donna Kay joining me today to talk about ADHD and treating ADHD symptoms naturally. Donna Kay is a board-certified holistic health and nutrition practitioner and the CEO and founder of the ADHD Thrive Institute and the creator of the ADHD Thrive Method for Kids program. As a mother of a child with ADHD, she knows firsthand the struggles that come with parenting a neurodiverse child, but she also knows the freedom that is possible once parents learn to reduce ADHD symptoms. Donna has been featured in Forbes, Authority Magazine, Medium, Influenceive, Thrive Global, and various others. She's also been a guest on multiple parenting and ADHD summits and podcasts. Her mission is to help families reduce ADHD symptoms naturally so that children with ADHD can thrive at home, at school, and in life. This was a super interesting episode, and I will tell you that it is, you know, she's talking, her focus is ADHD, but we're going to talk about the gut-brain connection and gut health, and really there is something in it for everybody. It can definitely help with a range of conditions, mental health conditions, etc., and so I highly encourage you to listen to it even if you don't have a child with ADHD. So without further ado, here is the conversation with Donna. Donna, thank you so much for being here. Would you mind just first telling us a little bit about yourself, who you are, and what you do?
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Taylor, for having me. I'm really excited to be on here today. So my name is Dana. I do live in the US, but I know I don't sound like it. I am originally from Australia, but I'm a board certified holistic health and nutrition practitioner. And I got into what I do because of my son. And so he's definitely my inspiration. Believe it or not, I actually didn't start out this way in my career in the health and wellness space. I was actually an accountant in a previous life. but when my son's, when concerns over my son's health grew over time, I knew that I had to do something different. He was actually diagnosed with ADHD when he was 4 years old. And we did what every parent would do. We went to the pediatrician and they gave us a prescription for medication. And I was relieved and I was actually excited. There was something that was going to help my family and was going to help my son. And I was super excited to go into that pharmacy to get that prescription medication filled. And at first, things were actually really great. See, before he was diagnosed, he used to have mammoth tantrums. He was so hyperactive. He couldn't sit still in his chair. He couldn't eat his dinner without getting up and down and up and down and up and down. And when I got that prescription, it was that relief. It was like, okay, we're going to be able to handle this. And so we started on that track and everything was really good at first. And he started playing nicely with his brother and, you know, life was sort of a little bit more calm. But what happened was that his tantrums all of a sudden became more severe and he started to have this rebound effect at the end of the day. And more symptoms came that weren't there before. And so we went back to the doctor and they increased the dosage, but then the side effects became even more worse. And then the doctor prescribed another medication to basically counteract the side effects of the first. So at that stage, he was on two strong medications, and this is stimulant medication, so amphetamines. And this continued until my young son at that age was now five, was on three very strong medications. And when the doctor suggested a fourth medication to counteract the new side effects of anxiety that had popped up, I just thought, this does not seem right. He's 5 years old. And that's when my career path completely changed. I went back to school. I did my holistic health degree, multiple specific certifications in this particular area. And I learned how food and other natural solutions can affect so many aspects of our lives. And I really began to learn that ADHD symptoms can be reduced naturally. And not once was I told about this by my doctor. And, you know, he's today in middle school, he's a teenager, and he's thriving. He hasn't been on meds for years and he's a straight A student. But, you know, I say this quite often, the most important thing is he's happy. And my family is happy, and we really now have that peace and that calm in our house that I always thought that's what a family was meant to be, and I finally have that. And so, you know, once I learned the importance of food on behavior and so many other aspects of our body and our life, I couldn't keep these strategies to myself. And that's when I launched my business and now been able to help other families, close to 1,000 already. So it's really exciting.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing that. I love hearing of your experience of kind of transitioning from this medical model of managing ADHD symptoms to a more natural holistic health. That's what, you know, I love holistic health in general. I feel like the medical system has so many good things. There's so much good that can come from medication. I'm definitely not discounting that, but there's also a lot of not so good that comes from it. And there's also a lot of, compartmentalization of the human body, and really everything is so connected. And I just personally think it's very, very interesting that doctors don't get a lot of education about nutrition. And a lot of times the information that they are and the recommendations that they are making when it comes to nutrition is not actually based in evidence. Yes. So I just think that's really interesting. We are going to talk more about, because you advocate for a food first approach to ADHD support, and I want to learn more about that, but I do have a question for you first.
Go for it.
So I feel like this would be good to just get out of the way, because I'm super curious. I don't know a ton about ADHD. Mm-hmm. What I do know is that I'm hearing the term more and more and more. And it seems like so many kids, this term, this diagnosis, this label is just thrown at them. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, I kind of do, and I believe this, but I would like to hear your thoughts. I believe that ADHD, I believe it exists. I believe the symptoms exist and they're being caused by something, which I'm sure you'll talk a little bit more about. But I also wonder if it's being overdiagnosed and if it's a label sometimes used just to describe typical behavior for children at a certain developmental stage. And maybe things besides food, which we'll get into, that we're not thinking about are, you know, the effect of screen time on behavior and the effect of environmental toxins and things like this. But also, isn't some of it just being in sitting in a school setting, having to sit still for 7 or 8 hours a day, which maybe kids aren't really supposed to be doing? Would love to hear your thoughts on that before we jump into the food aspect.
Yes, I love this question and I'm so glad that you asked it. You're 100% right. I sort of 6 million children have been diagnosed with ADHD in the US today, and three quarters of them are either receiving medication and or behavioral therapy for treatment of it. If I look at the 1,000 families that I have helped to date, 50% of them, we simply changed the diet and those symptoms disappeared. Mm-hmm. Most of those kids had a diagnosis of ADHD. So what that tells me is probably 50% of kids are being wrongly diagnosed. Now, the other 50%, we've still been able to help them, but we've had to go deeper to other things like going into the gut, and we can talk about that in a bit. Exactly what you said, environmental toxins, EMFs, screen time, all of those things add up to a toxic load on the body. And when your body is overcome with toxins and inflammation, that's really what we're trying to do, is we're trying to reduce inflammation in the body. The brain can't function well. The body can't function well. When a child is melting down and having a tantrum, its body is telling the parents, there is something wrong with me. This is not right. It's not right that a kid, you know, will be melting down for 45 minutes to an hour. There is something else going on that needs to be investigated. So I love that you brought that up. I strongly believe that so many kids are being wrongly diagnosed. But not only that, it's estimated that 54% of American children have been diagnosed with a chronic illness in 2018, but that figure was only 15% a couple of years before that. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at that increase from 15% to 54%, one in two have anxiety, asthma, type 1, type 2 diabetes, epilepsy, cystic fibrosis, heart problems, learning disabilities. One in five have allergies, one in six have developmental delays, and one in 68 have autism. So why? Why is this happening? Why is that increase, you know, risen so dramatically over such a short period of time? Because there are all these other factors that are contributing to the health of those children.
Right. And didn't they just update the autism rate to like one in 32 or something, like not very long ago?
They might have. Like
I think they did. And I know people will say, well, that's just because we have better, we're better able to capture those kids. We have better awareness of them so that we can get them in and get them diagnosed and get them the help. But really the data, the research does not show that alone, that might be some of it, but that alone cannot make up that huge difference, jumping from 15% chronic illness to 55% now?
54%. Look, I yes, we are able to diagnose, say, autism better, but you know, in that period of time, the diagnosis of asthma hasn't changed, has it? The diagnosis of type 1 and type 2 diabetes hasn't changed. The diagnosis of allergies haven't changed. And so, yes, we've been able to diagnose these other more chronic conditions in a better way, but not from 15% to 54% of kids in such a short period of time. So that tells me that there's something going on in the environment, in their body, exposure to things that really are exacerbating symptoms.
Right. So you back to the foods first approach. You advocate for a foods first approach to ADHD support. Can you just tell us what that means?
Yeah, look, when children are diagnosed with ADHD, the first course of treatment that most doctors suggest is medication. Okay. Mm-hmm. Many of them don't even tell parents that altering the diet can significantly reduce ADHD symptoms. And this is what happened with me and my son. When he was diagnosed, our doctor did not mention any other course of treatment. The only thing he told us about was medication. But unfortunately for us, the medication did more harm than good. And with each new medication, our doctor suggested, my son had new side effects or new symptoms, and then another medication to counteract that. And so, you know, when I started learning about the effects of gut health, which we'll go into, and food on ADHD symptoms, and how when we heal the gut, ADHD symptoms are completely reduced or removed, it is just, you know, I couldn't hold that to myself. But for my son, medication didn't help him, but food did. And that's why I recommend a food first approach to all of my clients. And as you said, I'm not against medication either, but it shouldn't be the first course of action, not when food can sometimes be even more effective and with no side effects at all to worry about. So if parents want to reduce ADHD symptoms in their children, they need to do something much more than just giving them a supplement or a pill. Supplements can definitely be effective, and so can medication. But if children continue to eat processed inflammatory foods like gluten, dairy, and soy, those ADHD symptoms are not going to go away because the foods that they're eating are exacerbating the symptoms in the first place. And so food first to me means rather than trying to find a magic pill that's going to fix a child, we clean up their diet instead. And in doing this, we reduce inflammation, like I mentioned before, and then the symptoms start to reduce because we are getting to the bottom of what's causing these symptoms in the first place. And I use this analogy quite a bit. When you're building a house, a solid foundation is not optional. It's a necessity. And if you don't have a solid foundation, that house isn't going to be very strong. And it's the same way for our cells. Diet is our foundation. If our diet is poor, we can never function at our best. And that's true for you and me, for us adults, but it's so true for our children.
Yeah, I love that. I love that analogy of the foundation of a house. I think that's so important. Okay. So you mentioned some of the foods that you would be maybe targeting for these children, gluten, dairy, soy. Why are these foods, why do you believe that they're so detrimental? You mentioned inflammation. Can you expand a little bit on that?
Yeah. So these three foods in particular, and it goes beyond that, you know, I just use them as my sort of like, this is, if you're going to do anything, do this. You know, along with that goes artificial colors and things like that, but I won't go into that. But these foods are highly inflammatory substances and can lead to an immune response in the body and increased intestinal permeability. And this is known as leaky gut. They basically break down the lining of the gut. And I'll probably just go into a little bit of why gluten. Gluten's like the number one thing, really, in my opinion. And, you know, I've looked at a lot of lab tests of testing gluten, and just it's so highly inflammatory and reactive to so many children. So that's the number one thing that I suggest that families cut out of the diet. And, you know, really not just families, it should be everyone. No one really should be eating gluten because, plain and simple, it is harmful for everyone because that triggers that increased intestinal permeability in everyone, even those who don't show an allergic response to it. And so what that means is, it refers to the breakdown of the intestinal walls. And so when functioning properly, the walls of the intestine form a barrier and they allow water and nutrients to pass through, but block other things from entering the bloodstream. Now, when a person has that increased intestinal permeability, that can lead to leaky gut, which basically means the tight junctions in the gut that are supposed to control what passes through the lining of the intestines aren't doing their job very well. And what they're doing is they're allowing toxins and other harmful substances to enter the bloodstream that aren't supposed to be there. So what do you imagine happens when these toxic substances enter the bloodstream? You know, the body fights them off and tries to get rid of them. And when something enters the bloodstream that isn't supposed to be there, it triggers an inflammatory response as the body seeks to rectify the issue. So gluten leads to increased intestinal permeability, which leads to leaky gut, which leads to inflammation, which leads to additional symptoms like brain fog, aka inattention, constipation, hyperactivity, anger issues, wheezing, stomach problems, so many different symptoms. And so, but many of those symptoms sound like ADHD, and that's because they are. So by cutting out gluten, parents of children with ADHD are removing one food that significantly contributes to inflammation in the body. And in my experience, if we remove gluten along with those other highly inflammatory foods like dairy and soy, but focus on feeding the body the right way, families find that ADHD symptoms diminish significantly and sometimes disappear completely because they're really allowing that gut to heal.
Mm. So I struggle with this. Little caveat here. I'm interested in your thoughts on this. I came from my childhood. I was raised on a very standard American diet, lots of processed food, had stomach issues my whole life, had headaches my whole life, had brain fog, didn't know it. Thought this was just the normal way to live. Was never diagnosed with ADHD or anything. I did very well in school, but I just felt gross. I felt bad all the time. So then I started learning more about food. Very long process, but basically I had a point in time when I had my babies were babies and they had dairy sensitivities where I had cut out, we were trying to explore what was going on. I cut out dairy, soy, gluten, learned more about what you're saying about gluten, learned more about what you're saying about dairy. We weren't eating those things, but I've kind of since then, we've reintroduced those things. I follow more of I don't follow any philosophy 100%, but more of a Western A price philosophy where we try to focus on sourcing. So, we eat sourdough. I make my own sourdough bread. We eat mostly raw dairy, raw cheese. I'm curious your thoughts about, is it more of the way that these foods are processed, or is it that really our bodies can't handle any amount of dairy or gluten, regardless of where they're sourced from?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And we come up with that quite a bit, in the families that we work with. I will say that some families or some children or some adults can handle like a really good quality sourdough. I have looked at close to 1,000 lab tests for gluten. It's called a wheat zoomer, Z-O-O-M-E-R. I know I don't pronounce it as how that says, zoomer. And basically what it does, it looks at all the different peptides inside gluten. And so gluten and wheat are this protein, and then all inside there are many, many different peptides. And so many people are sensitive to so many of those individual peptides inside gluten. You may not have an anaphylaxis response to it. You may not have any outwardly facing symptoms, but what happens to the body over time is this toxic load increases on the body and the gut breaks down slowly. And the way that I look at it is that you've got this scale. 100% functioning is like optimum health. 0% functioning is death. Okay. And 50% functioning is when symptoms occur. Okay. So you might be eating gluten, you might be eating dairy, you might be getting toxic exposure, you might have exposure to something like a parasite. And as this goes on throughout the years, you don't start to see symptoms that come out until 50% of functioning. Now, at first, that's okay. But then when you get to that 50% of functioning, that's when you start to see symptoms. So if you're living a low toxic life, if you're living a life like you're mentioning and not getting exposed to a lot of these other foods, then you might be able to function really, really well. But when looking at these lab tests, it goes beyond just that sourcing. The peptides that people are sensitive to, there are so many components inside gluten, inside wheat. You've got people that are sensitive to wheat, okay? And you've got people that are sensitive to, I could list out the peptides that are inside the components of that. And I've just looked at these labs that are just splattered with red markers everywhere. So yes, some people can handle that. If the load on their body is low, if their detoxification pathways are open, if their genetic mutations are the good ones are not, compromised, then yeah, that could be good. And so you've kind of got to balance it with the rest of your life to say, well, this is working for us now, and it sounds like it is, and that's fantastic. So you're able to handle that sourdough, you're able to handle that raw dairy, Now, you know, one of the things with dairy is it mimics estrogen production. With soy, for example, it mimics estrogen production. And so in women, you can get this overload of estrogen in the body, and it can cause something called estrogen dominance. And so that can then create symptoms and not feeling well. And so it's kind of like having to look at it as a holistic picture. And I know that might not directly answer your question, but in a roundabout way, you've got to assess your whole life and you've got to assess the whole picture to know whether or not that body is able to handle that.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And I think that I've actually experienced that, because there are times like when we're, when we are going through some sort of illness, we tend to eliminate gluten and dairy more because we find that we just can't handle it as much. It increases our inflammation and increases our, it just makes us feel worse. Yes. And, but when we are relatively healthy and we haven't been, or also like when we travel and we're not eating the best, like we're eating out a lot and we're not able to control our food as much, we kind of feel sluggish and like we have headaches. And so we kind of cut back on the dairy and gluten, because we find that if we eat too much of it, it just exacerbates that. Mm-hmm. Whereas like when we're home, where we have more control over our meals, where, you know, there's not a lot of environmental toxin exposure, we can handle it. So yes. I think that makes a lot of sense. And it really boils down to, it's so individual on so many factors, not just this, you know, this one size fits all approach of nobody, no human can have gluten, no human can have dairy.
Correct. And, you know, you have to remember the population that I'm working with are in a chronic state of inflammation.
Right.
And so what we're doing is we're removing the foods that create inflammation. And even if someone doesn't have a blood sensitivity to gluten or dairy, I still suggest that they remove it, because no matter what, it creates inflammation. So we're trying to reduce that inflammation as much as possible to allow the healing to occur. And when you allow that healing to occur, that's when symptoms start to move away. Now, we've been gluten, dairy, and soy free for many years. I would say every 6 months, I might let my son have non-GMO organic soy. Once in a blue moon, I would let him have something with dairy in it. But in general, we don't. And so we live a low toxic life. We live low inflammatory, and our bodies can handle it once every 6 months. But you're so right. When you go on holidays, you come home and you're like, oh my gosh, I need a major reset.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So what do children with ADHD need to eat more of then?
Yeah. And it's not just about what to take out. So this is a great question. It's really about what to put into the diet. Now, as far as foods to eat, my best tip is to focus on whole, nutritious, fresh fruits and veggies, grass-fed animal proteins such as meat, poultry, seafood, eggs, and also plenty of healthy fats like avocado and coconut oils, because they feed the brain, and it's so important to feed that brain. You also want to be drinking plenty of spring water, so you're avoiding harmful chemicals that are in some waters, but also water really helps detox the body and remove the toxins that are already there. And so these foods, they provide our body with the nutrients it needs so it can really function at its best. My rule of thumb is when buying ingredients, is to avoid anything that I can't pronounce. And usually when I turn around the packet of something, you know, if it's got greater than 5 ingredients, usually I put it back. So if I can't pronounce it, or if it's got too many ingredients, that I put it back. But the best thing to do is focus on whole foods rather than those packaged foods. And look, kids need to be kids. And so, you know, when working with families, we always provide them better for them alternatives, because they're going to need treats. They are. It's just this life, unfortunately, that we live in. A lot of the time they're rewarded with food, and we don't want them to miss out on that.
Yeah. Are there any studies or research that show the benefits of this approach, this foods first approach?
Yeah, look, definitely. And I have run into many non-believers in my time. And I will tell you, my husband used to be one of them. And it was really the science that first made me rethink the direction that we were traveling with my son, you know, when he was diagnosed at 4. I love to share the studies. It was the science that convinced my husband as well. And it was that convinced that natural methods are worth a shot. There was a study in 2015 that concluded that 64% of children diagnosed with ADHD were actually experiencing a hypersensitivity to food. 64%. Okay.
Wow.
I wonder what might happen if these children change their diets and remove the foods that they were sensitive to.
Mm-hmm.
You know, makes me think, is it possible that these ADHD symptoms would disappear or at least become more manageable? In my experience, definitely. Yeah. There was another study that showed that 56% of ADHD kids tested positive for food allergies compared to less than 8% of kids in the general population. Okay, mm-hmm. So 8% compared to 56% of ones that have been diagnosed with ADHD. And that tells me there is a clear correlation between ADHD and food allergies. In 2017, there was a study that concluded that the addition of micronutrients in the diet, so that really good food that we were talking about earlier, improved overall function, reduced impairments, improved attention, emotional regulation, and aggression. So clearly medication is not the only way to help children with ADHD. Now, I could keep going on and on and on, but I'm sure we've got other important things to talk about today.
Yeah, no, I think that research is super fascinating, that there's this clear link within the gut and with foods. And I just think it's something that a lot of people still think is almost like a conspiracy theory. And it's so frustrating because the science really does support it. But as you probably know, what is it that, you know, it's been shown that the medical industry, medical doctors are like 17 years behind medical research. It takes them like 17 to 20 years to get caught up with what the research actually says.
But also they're only required to do 1 hour of nutrition training in their whole degree.
Yeah.
They just don't have the experience or the knowledge on it, and that's fine. But the thing that I think is the hardest part is that they don't even suggest it.
Yeah.
Why do they just hand over that prescription? Why don't they hand over my new book, Thriving with ADHD, which is a guide for families to naturally reduce their child's ADHD symptoms? Why isn't that the first port of call? You know, why is it a strong amphetamine medication?
Right. Well, and I mean, I can't tell you how many doctors, other medical professionals I've heard say there is absolutely no impact on the body or on health with depending on what food you eat, which is just outrageous. But so many actually believe that.
It is outrageous.
The food is just neutral.
Yes. Yeah. Well, when we went to the doctor, and when I started learning about all of this, I said to him, I said, oh, look, I want to change my son's diet. I want to do some gut testing. I'd love to do some, you know, food intolerance. And he's like, don't bother. None of that works. That's like literally word for word what he said to me.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned gut health. What is the gut-brain connection? Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yeah, definitely. It is a huge component. You know, next to diet is the foundation, really. Everything begins in the gut. And 80% of the body's entire immune system is within the gut walls, along with billions of nerve cells and an extensive amount of beneficial bacteria. And all of our children's health is quite literally connected to everything that occurs in the gut. And, you know, I've got countless families that come to me for guidance with their children's ADHD symptoms. And when I ask whether there's any family history of sickness, or people usually tell me that everyone's really fit and healthy. But when I sort of like delve deeper into there and press forward and ask whether their child has suffered from diarrhea or constipation, they often tell me that they have. And they're actually surprised to learn that it's not healthy or normal. It might be very common with kids, but it's definitely a byproduct of an unhealthy gut. So I then ask if the children have been on a lot of antibiotics when they were younger, and a massive percentage of the children that I work with have. And I actually wish that I kept some sort of tally of how many kids had actually been on multiple rounds of antibiotics in the past, but I haven't. I might start now though. But what happens with antibiotics is they work by killing bacteria or prevent it from growing, which makes sense. But unfortunately, most antibiotics can't distinguish between the good bacteria and the bad bacteria. And that means it can wreak havoc on the gut, you know, the healthy gut bacteria. And many people actually have, you know, they suffer lasting changes to their gut flora as a result of taking antibiotics. And this might have been exactly what happened to you, Taylor, when you were younger. Why were you having these gut issues? Why was it you having that brain fog? So a large percentage of children have been on multiple rounds of antibiotics, and this in turn compromises the gut. And when the gut is compromised, it's not a huge surprise, you know, to see that disorders and illnesses that I mentioned earlier are on that rise. Now, you mentioned the gut-brain connection, and I really want to tie that gut health to the brain and ADHD. And what that means is, in essence, our brains are deeply connected to our guts. And if our guts aren't functioning well, our brains won't be able to function well either. And I love percentages and studies and all of this stuff. I think this is the biggest thing for me relating to the gut-brain connection, but 95% of the body's serotonin and 50% of the body's dopamine is produced in the gut. And these neurotransmitters are the ones that help manage emotions, balance mood, help our cognitive function. And emotional dysregulation is a common symptom of ADHD, but many parents don't realize that this emotional dysregulation actually starts in the gut, where the serotonin and the dopamine are made. And the problem then is not the emotions sort of themselves, but the fact that the correct amount of these vital neurotransmitters are not being made in the first place. So by working to improve the gut health, many parents of children with ADHD find that the emotional dysregulation problems solve themselves. And that's usually one of the first changes we see when we change the diet and start reducing that inflammation. Now, the brain has many areas involved in gut function, but the main one is the frontal lobe. And it's the area of the brain that talks to the gut via two-way chemical messengers and nerve branches. And the frontal lobe is involved in things like attention and focus and executive function and planning and organizing and problem solving, which are extremely common issues that people with ADHD suffer from. So they struggle with these types of tasks because the frontal lobe is in the brain. Many people believe that, or under the impression that, the brain is what needs care, when in reality, it's also the gut that's causing the problem. I like to think of it this way. And again, I like analogies and studies and statistics. Mm-hmm. Have you ever felt that those butterflies in your stomach because you were nervous about something? Mm-hmm. You know, maybe it was a first date or a test or something like that. They're perfect examples of the gut-brain connection. Our bodies perceive whatever we're nervous about as a stressful situation, and then our brains trigger those raw emotions in our gut, resulting in butterflies or nausea in the stomach. And that's the brain talking to the gut. But the reverse is also true. So our guts talk to the brains as well. And when the digestive system, and specifically the intestinal tract, has a higher level of bad gut bacteria than good, that's called gut dysbiosis. And gut dysbiosis creates inflammation that travels through the vagus nerve to the brain. And once it reaches the brain, it creates those symptoms: brain fog, inability to focus, confusion, dizziness, poor memory, and a whole host of other neurobehavioral disorders like ADHD, anxiety, depression. It's kind of like a highway. The gut and brain are, you know, constantly sending messages back and forth. Now, when medication is prescribed for ADHD, it's often to treat the symptoms in the brain alone, but that medication does absolutely nothing about whatever might be going on in that gut.
I love that. That was a really great explanation. And I really like how, you know, as I'm as you're talking, I'm reflecting on, we're talking about specifically ADHD right now, but it's not just about ADHD. I mean, the gut-brain connection and gut health impacts everybody, and it can really have such a huge impact when people kind of shift their perspective of what health is and how to be healthy and well. When they shift it and start thinking about the gut, it impacts so many different conditions that people have, mental health. Have you read Kelly Brogan's work? You know Kelly Brogan?
Yes.
I read her book, I can't remember the name of it right now, but it was on women's mental health years and years ago, when I was a new mom, and it transformed my worldview specifically related to mental health. And so you kind of mentioned that. So there's a little bit of something here for everybody, even if you're not, you don't have a child who's experiencing ADHD symptoms.
Yeah, 1000%. Like, honestly, yeah, I focus on kids with ADHD, but the families that go through my program, the parents, the improvements that they have, that they don't have ADHD, their anxiety goes away, their cholesterol falls back into normal ranges. One lady couldn't even get out of bed in the morning or go upstairs and downstairs because she had such terrible hip pain. She went on a, you know, this low inflammatory diet, went through my program for her children. And 10 weeks into the program, the doctor rang and said, we've got a specialist appointment for you. And she's like, I don't need to come anymore. My hip pain has completely disappeared. So this is not just for ADHD. This is literally probably for everybody's health, for every condition.
Yeah. So cool. So what are some of the big challenges that families experience when changing the way that they eat?
Yeah, look, there are a number of challenges. I'm not going to lie. It's not like super easy to start with, you know, and it is different for every family. For me, what the challenge was the most is I tried to change everything on day one. And this is definitely not the approach that I teach in my program. I always tell families that Rome wasn't built in a day, and transforming your family's diet won't be complete in a day either, because it's not a race. It is a marathon, and it's okay to take it slowly. It's okay to take one step at a time. And so if the pace that's doable for the listeners or their family or their life is one change a week, or one change every 2 weeks, that's okay. You need to give yourself permission to take things slow. And, you know, as you've been discussing, like, it's not a diet. It's really not a phase. It's a lifestyle change. And when it becomes part of your lifestyle, it becomes second nature, and then changes don't seem as hard. For me, I tried to change everything on day one, and I had multiple panic attack after panic attack after panic attack. So I was like, what am I going to feed my family? Mm-hmm. But there are other challenges out there. You know, it can be expensive. And someday I would love for this to change. I would love to see healthy food at the same price as, or even cheaper than, processed CRAP food. Mm-hmm. But that's another tangent for another day. But yeah, there are definitely things that families can do to make it to make eating healthy affordable. Some of those things are meal planning, buying things on sale, never letting fruit go off, always put it in the freezer. And so, you know, meal planning is the biggest thing. Mm-hmm. But there are many, many other strategies.
Buying in bulk is a really big one that we do.
Yep, buying in bulk.
It's always cheaper in bulk.
It is. And staying away from processed food, because processed food, especially gluten, dairy, and soy-free, are more expensive. And that's because you're paying for the convenience. Things like making bread at home, like you do, it sounds like, which is fantastic, because gluten-free bread is expensive. You know, eating breakfast for dinner sometimes, having meatless Mondays. There are definitely ways that you can boost up your budget and make it cheaper for you. Another challenge that families face is birthday parties. You know, how do you avoid all of these things at birthday parties or school functions or events, or going to restaurants? Restaurants is a big thing. We eat out all the time. We don't even think about it anymore because it's our normal. We know what we need to do. But I think the best thing that families can do is to check the restaurant website beforehand or call ahead and find out the options that are available for them before they go. Many times, only with slight modifications, you can make something gluten, dairy, and soy-free. Mm-hmm. And many restaurants these days have gluten-free buns, for hamburgers, or you can bring your own bun from home. And we always have gluten-free buns in the freezer. If we're unsure if the restaurant has it, we'll take our own. You can bring your own ketchup. You can bring your own, coconut aminos in replacement mm-hmm. for soy sauce, those sort of things. So I recommend people just sit down, look at where they normally go, do some prep ahead, 20 minutes, and then they've got that list for the future when they go out. Now, for birthday parties, I always say keep gluten, dairy, soy-free cupcakes or cookies in the freezer at all times. And so when my son's going to a birthday party, he grabs one out of the freezer, and often he loves it so much better than what they're actually having. Things like holidays, we always talk to the family ahead of time to see what's being served, and then we fill in any gaps where we need to and bring it ourselves. Things like school birthday parties, I always send a bag of approved treats at the beginning of the year for my son's teacher to keep on hand when there's a school party. But there's, you know, this is what we do on a day-to-day basis. And if a family has a challenge, I can tell you that a family before that has had that same challenge, and we've developed a resource to help that family overcome it. And if someone throws a doozy at us, we will overcome it for them.
Yeah, I love those. Those are really helpful tips. And as a family who we used to have a lot of food restrictions and we don't have so many anymore, and we kind of follow like an 80-20 philosophy where we don't really mind, you know, we try to avoid like certain things like food dyes. But like outside of the house, we let our kids eat what the other kids are eating. But like if we had something like ADHD happening or big symptoms, we would obviously have to contain that a little bit. And I found we did that a while, you know, when my daughter was younger, because she actually had reactions to food. And I found as she got older, it just became harder because she began to feel left out and even different. Like when I would give her a different option to eat, she wasn't eating the same thing as the other kids. So she would feel left out. And I feel like, I don't know, like four and five is where that really hit. And that was a really hard age for us because she was wanting to feel like she belonged and like she was a part of something, and she kind of felt different. So I feel like there are probably ages and stages that are more challenging than others. But again, if it's something that you do all the time and it's just a part of your life, it just becomes the norm, right? I mean, that would be my guess.
Yeah, it totally does become the norm. As I said, we don't even think about it. It is part of our life. It's like if you're used to making tacos every Tuesday, then, you know, you make tacos that are gluten-free, dairy-free, and that's your normal and it's easy. You don't even think about it. You can still do that. And so once it becomes your life, it becomes your new normal. You don't even think about it. And, you know, my son's been eating this way since he was five. He's now in middle school. And so it's part of his life, and he goes off and he makes decisions if he goes and takes candy or something like that he shouldn't have, and we all pay for it afterwards. Yeah. And he understands in his body that, okay, this doesn't do the best thing for me, but he has to make those conscious decisions and he has to make those mistakes himself. And so that's, you know, generally as they get older, that's what will happen. And we just talk very much about how does this feel inside your body? What are the symptoms that come out from it? Can you understand and correlate between food and feelings mm-hmm. in your body?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, something that I think is really interesting is that when, like, I grew up with processed food, I was addicted to it. It has an addictive component. And I just thought it tasted really good. But as you kind of change your diet and start eating more whole foods, your taste buds change and you're not as addicted to that type of food. And so my daughter at five is at the point where she might have, like, I don't know, a cupcake with like super sugary frosting on it. And she'll come home and tell me, well, yours that you made tastes better, or your bread tastes better than that bread that I had. Or like her cousin was eating like cheese puffs one time when she was over there, and she tried one and she said, I didn't like it. It just tasted funny. So I think it's a good like learning opportunity too.
Yes, definitely. We always talk about those learning opportunities, and your taste buds do change. Once you get over that initial hump, food tastes different. Food tastes better. Fresh food tastes better. And, it's amazing. Like we have a lot of picky eaters in our program. I'd say about 70% of families have a picky eater. And that's, again, another challenge that they may come up with. But I will tell you that once you reduce inflammation in the body, the palate opens up, and it's quite amazing to watch the food that might have tasted gross before, all of a sudden they're craving that. And it's really beautiful. We had this one family in the program whose son ate 5 foods when he started.
Wow.
And they'd done a year of feeding therapy and play therapy to try and help. Didn't work. Went in our program, now eats over 200 different foods and definitely not a picky eater anymore. And that was because we were able to reduce that inflammation in the body.
Well, and I think I've heard this before, correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't the content, I guess, of your gut bacteria influence what you crave? Like, don't certain gut bacteria crave like similar, do you know what I'm saying? Does that make sense?
No, definitely. You're exactly right. Certain bacteria feed on mm-hmm. on certain foods. When you've got an overload of a certain bacteria, we will tell the family, okay, we don't want to eat foods that, you know, are sausages or chicken skin or this, because it will feed that bad bacteria. And so, you know, you're exactly right. And it's also like, when you've got a sugar addiction, mm-hmm. okay, the more you eat, the more you need to get the same hit. And especially when it relates to kids with ADHD, a lot of them have, you know, low dopamine, and sugar gives you a dopamine hit. Screens gives you that dopamine hit. And that's why they're so addicted to sugar and they're so addicted to screens, is because they're craving that dopamine hit. And the more they do it, the more they need, and the more that their body needs to get that same hit.
Yeah. Okay. So beyond changing the foods that our children eat, what are some other necessary steps to support ADHD naturally?
Yeah. So, you know, as I mentioned earlier, about 50% of the families that we work with, we literally change the diet and that's it. The other 50%, we have great improvement, but we know that there's something deeper going on. And that's when we really need to sort of go beyond the food. What else is going on in that body? And we look for these underlying stressors. And so these hidden stressors are sort of dysfunctions or malfunctions in the body. So we look at the gut, we look at hormones, immune system, detoxification pathways, and these hidden stressors highly correlate with some of the most common health complaints, not just ADHD, you know, everything else as well. And, you know, if they're left unchecked and not corrected in the body, it sort of cascades downstream into other areas of the body as well. And once, you know, dysfunction builds upon another, depending on individual weak links in the metabolism and the body, that's when disease and symptoms may occur. And that's when I was talking about earlier, that 0 to 100, and, you know, at 50%, that's when the symptoms occur, because that dysfunction builds upon each other. And so some common underlying stressors for ADHD in particular are things like nutritional deficiencies and food intolerances. For instance, my son was extremely sensitive to raspberries. I mean, who would have thought? Raspberries are super healthy, aren't they? Mm-hmm. So this was actually driving inflammation in his body. Another child I worked with a few years ago had a banana sensitivity. And once we learnt about that sensitivity, we temporarily removed the food. And that's when a lot of his symptoms started to go away, while we healed the gut. Now, another couple of underlying stresses creating inflammation in the body, pharmaceutical medication, unfortunately, creates a toxic response, breakdown of the gut, a leaky gut, a hormonal imbalance, environmental toxins and heavy metals is a big one as well. And even cultural or lifestyle factors can contribute to underlying stresses. And when we know there's something deeper going on, we bring in functional lab testing to identify what they may be and target that accordingly.
Mm. So there's a lot to unpack. It's like a puzzle. I deal with sleep, and for me, sleep is a puzzle. There's so many different pieces, so many different factors that influence sleep. And it sounds like this is very much the same.
Yeah, definitely is. And I was saying this the other day, but I like to look at it like baking a pie. You know, you want to bake a really good pie, and we think our children is a really good pie. And you need all of these ingredients. For me, the pastry of the pie is probably diet. The apple inside the apple pie is probably the gut. And then you've got some cinnamon, and then you've got some nutmeg. And so, you know, all of these little things are ingredients that you need to look into to make the best possible pie that you can. And so it's really about, you know, trying to find those little things and finding someone that can help you unpack all of that. That's the thing, because mm-hmm. when you try to do it yourself, it's really hard and it can take a really long time, as I figured out.
Yeah. Well, Donna, thank you so much for joining us. I've learned so much from you. I am sure everybody listening has too. Can you tell us, and for people who want to just learn more from you, what resources do you have out there for people? Where can people find you?
Yeah, definitely. Look, I have just launched my book, as I was mentioning earlier. You can pick it up on Amazon. It's called Thriving with ADHD, and it's a guide to naturally reducing ADHD symptoms in your child. If they are interested in working with me, you can look at ADHDThriveInstitute.com. I'm also on all of the social platforms, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube. I'm even on TikTok. I can't believe I am, but I am. Oh my gosh, I got forced into it. But you can search up ADHD Thrive Institute on any of those platforms to find out more.
Wonderful. I went on TikTok for a very short period of time and I just could not do it. So I deleted it from my phone.
I know it is,
but
not
I
me.
Applaud you for that.
Yeah, I know. It's not me. It is. I'm doing it for the kids.
Yes. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Donna. I will put those links in the show notes so everybody can access them easily.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Taylor.
Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, please subscribe and leave a review if you feel called to. It really helps our message reach more parents. You can also follow me on Instagram at Taylor Kulik for similar content, or visit my website at www.taylorkulik.com. I offer online courses where we really dive into infant and toddler sleep holistically. And we also offer one-to-one holistic sleep support services if you're looking to improve your child's sleep or shift patterns without sleep training. If you know a parent who would benefit from this podcast, please share. And if you'd like to financially support this podcast to allow me to create more episodes more often, you can visit anchor.fm/Taylor Kulik. I hope you'll join me next time.